The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from newatlas.com, Research Suggests Metformin Could Slow Down Alzheimer's. From gizmodo.com, Apple's Fixing an iOS 15 Issue with Safari. ScienceAlert.com reports the first 3D map of a glioblastoma tumor. NNO via the Tribune Network has an article on the Noopl device, N-O-O-P-L, that enhances hearing in crowded areas. Cool Blind Tech has articles on a wristband prototype that offers greater independence, and the Nest is offering air quality reports, among other Cool Blind Tech articles. So let's get started. From newatlas.com, new research suggests diabetes drug could slow Alzheimer's progression, by Wavebreak Media / Deposit Photos. A new study published in the journal Neurology is reporting an association between a particular class of drugs used to treat type 2 diabetes and decreased Alzheimer's disease biomarkers. It is unclear exactly how these diabetes drugs could exert neuroprotective effects, but Alzheimer's experts are calling for large-scale clinical trials to explore these potential treatments in non-diabetic groups. For some time, researchers have observed higher rates of dementia in patients with type 2 diabetes. A UK study earlier this year suggested high blood pressure could be the causal link between diabetes and dementia, but it is still unclear what connects the two conditions. Alongside this association between diabetes and dementia, there have increasingly been observations of unusually low rates of neurodegenerative disease in groups of diabetic patients taking some anti-diabetic medications. An Australian observational study last year saw significantly lower rates of cognitive decline in older diabetic patients taking a drug called metformin, compared to rates of decline seen in non-diabetic patients not taking the drug. This new research looked at a particular class of diabetes drugs called dipeptidyl peptidase 4 inhibitors, DPP-4I, also known as gliptins. Using retrospective data, the researchers compared brain scans and cognitive test results from 70 diabetic patients taking DPP-4I against 71 diabetic patients not taking DPP-4I and 141 non-diabetic subjects. The entire cohort had an average of age of 76, and all showed early signs of Alzheimer's disease based on cognitive tests and PET scans. All subjects were followed around 6 years to measure decline over time, and cognitive scores were similar in all groups at the start of the study. At the end of the study period, those diabetic patients on DPP-4I drugs showed significantly slower rates of cognitive decline compared to both other groups. Using a common cognitive test called the Mini Mental State Exam, MMSE, the researchers saw a diabetic patient on DPP-4I drugs show annual scores decline by 0.87 points. In comparison, the diabetic patients not on DPP-4I drugs displayed annual declines on the MMSE of 1.65 points, and those without diabetes declined each year by 1.48 points. Looking at the primary biomarker of Alzheimer's disease, amyloid protein buildup in the brain, the study found those patients taking DPP-4I drugs had lower average levels than other diabetic patients and non-diabetic patients. People with diabetes have been shown to have a higher risk of Alzheimer's disease, possibly due to high blood sugar levels, which have been linked to the buildup of amyloid beta in the brain, says Phil Hugh Lee, one of the researchers working on the project. Not only did our study show that people taking dipeptidyl peptidase 4 inhibitors to lower blood sugar levels had less amyloid in their brains overall, it also showed lower levels in areas of the brain involved in Alzheimer's disease. The big question this new study is not able to answer is whether DPP-4I drugs have direct neuroprotective properties that could be beneficial preventing cognitive decline in non-diabetic subjects. James Connell, CONNELL, a scientist working with Alzheimer's Research UK, says there is urgent need to explore all possible treatment options for dementia. Diabetes is an important risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, but we don't yet fully understand how the two diseases are linked, says Connell, who did not work on this new research. Alzheimer's Research UK scientists are also exploring other potential diabetes drugs and whether they could have benefit for those with dementia. Ultimately, we'll need to see the results of these studies and of large-scale clinical trials to fully understand whether this approach could be beneficial. The new study was published in the journal Neurology, source American Academy of Neurology. From Gizmodo.com, Apple is fixing one of the worst parts of iOS 15. In an un-Apple-like move, it will give users the ability to opt out of Safari's controversial redesign. There's a lot of neat things coming with iOS 15, but Safari's redesign was a major disappointment. However, it looks like Apple's listening to feedback because the sixth iOS 15 beta now gives users the option to bring back the old Safari, in quotes. As a refresher, Safari got a major redesign as part of the iOS 15 beta. The search bar was moved to the bottom of the screen, mostly as a way to make it easier for one-handed use. However, it wouldn't stay put. Instead, it would ping-pong between the top and bottom of the screen, depending on what you were doing. Other key functions, like the reload button, were hidden within unintuitive menus. In our iOS 15 preview, the Safari redesign was one of the few features where it felt like Apple had simply missed the mark. According to The Independent, Apple's been making small tweaks to the redesign, following backlash from beta users. One small initial change was in one of the beta updates. The search bar stayed put at the bottom of the screen. However, the latest update now allows users to select a single tab mode, which The Independent says is effectively the old version of Safari with the search bar up top. Well, so what? Isn't that the purpose of a beta? To see what works and doesn't before a public release? Yes, but this is also Apple, a company known for making you deal with its design choices whether you like them or not. Take the fierce public backlash when Apple decided headphone jacks were over, for example. At the time, Apple SVP Phil Schiller infamously said the reason to move on comes down to one word, courage. Translation, sorry folks, you might not like what we've done, but trust us when we say it's for the best. That's pretty much been Apple's stance on design changes in a nutshell. Apple does occasionally change course, but it takes a lot. Last year, the company caved when it came to its hated butterfly keyboards and returned to scissor switches for its laptops. However, it took nearly 5 years of complaining from some very famous people, too, Hotlink, to get to that point. The fact is that Apple is including a separate option for users as a major shift from their usual strategy, even if it's one that's being applauded by almost everyone who had to suffer through Safari redesign in beta. I'm glad Apple is now offering an option to revert to the old Safari address bar in iOS 15, but this idea of Apple offering two different UIs as a setting is un-Apple-like, I think. Mark Gurman, G-U-R-M-A-N, a veteran Apple prognosticator, wrote on Twitter. Of course, things are still in beta. The final public release of iOS 15 likely won't drop until next month, September, when Apple is widely expected to launch the iPhone 13 and other next-gen gadgets. But for once, it's nice to see Apple offer users more customization instead of less. Subscribe to our newsletter, News from the Future, delivered to the present. I'm including this next article because some forms of glioblastoma do affect optic nerves. From ScienceAlert.com, a deadly brain tumor has been 3D printed in the lab for the first time. For the first time, one of the deadliest forms of brain tumor has been successfully 3D bioprinted, resulting in the most complete lab-grown model yet. Scientists from Tel Aviv University printed a glioblastoma in a brain-like environment, including vessels that supply the mass with blood. This is the most complete replication of a tumor and surrounding tissue yet, a breakthrough that could help develop treatments, the researchers said. Glioblastoma may be rare, but it's particularly horrible. It grows quickly and aggressively on the brain or brain stem, cannot be cured, and is almost always fatal. It's also hard to treat. Because the cancer is so aggressive, treatment needs to be pretty hardcore, usually requiring courses in chemotherapy and radiotherapy, which the patients often grow too ill to complete. Glioblastoma tissue taken and cultured from tumors removed from patients is one avenue via which doctors hope to learn more about this diabolical cancer. This is usually done on petri dishes and is an extremely useful tool, but it has limitations, said cancer researcher and nanoscientist Ronit Sachi-Fainero of Tel Aviv University. That name is spelled Sachi-Fainaro. In a previous study, she and her team had found a protein called P-selectin that is produced when cancer cells in glioblastoma encounter microglial cells in the brain, the most prominent immune cells in the central nervous system. This protein triggers the microglia to act in support of the glioblastoma rather than fighting against it, with devastating results for the person. However, we identified the protein in tumors removed during surgery, but not in glioblastoma cells grown on 2D plastic petri dishes in our lab, she explained. The reason is that cancer, like all tissues, behaves very differently on a plastic surface than it does in the human body. Approximately 90% of all experimental drugs fail at the clinical stage because the success achieved in the lab is not reproduced in patients. The team's attempt at finding a solution to this limitation was a glioblastoma bio ink created from glioblastoma cells, astrocytes, and microglia derived from a patient. Using a removable bio ink coated in types of cells that form blood vessels, they also managed to provide their model with a functional blood supply. Each glioblastoma model was 3D printed in a bioreactor in hydrogel based on an extracellular matrix also taken from the patient. The glioblastoma model was then connected to and communicated with the extracellular matrix via the blood vessels to simulate the way the tumors interact with the surrounding brain tissue. This provides a way to study the way the cancer behaves that is specific to its environment, the brain. The physical and mechanical properties of the brain are different from those of other organs like the skin, breast, or bone, Sachi-Fainero said. Breast tissue consists mostly of fat. Bone tissue is mostly calcium. Each tissue has its own properties, which affect the behavior of cancer cells and how they respond to medications. Growing all types of cancer on identical plastic surfaces is not an optimal simulation of the clinical setting. The team then tested their models using P-selectin. A P-selectin inhibitor was introduced to glioblastoma cultures grown in petri dishes, as well as the 3D printed models and animal models. In the petri dish cultures, no change was observed in the growth or cell migration compared to untreated controls. For the 3D printed and animal models, the P-selectin inhibitor resulted in a slower growth rate compared to untreated controls. This experiment showed us why potentially effective drugs rarely reach the clinic simply because they fail tests in 2D models, and vice versa, why drugs considered a phenomenal success in the lab ultimately fail in clinical trials, Sachi-Fainero said. Genetic sequencing and the growth rate of the 3D printed tumors also more closely matched what the team observed in living patients. On 2D petri dishes, the samples change over time so that they no longer match the patient's tumors, but the 3D printed glioblastomas remained similar to patient samples. In addition, the 2D cultures all grow at the same rate, whereas the 3D printed tumors showed varying growth rates, which is what is observed in humans and animals. This not only suggests a way to more accurately study the behavior of glioblastoma, it could lead to ways to develop patient-specific interventions. If we take a sample from a patient's tissue, together with its extracellular matrix, we can 3D bioprint from this sample 100 tiny tumors and test many different drugs in various combinations to discover the optimal treatment for this specific tumor, Sachi-Fainero explained. But perhaps the most exciting aspect is finding the novel druggable target proteins and genes in cancer cells, a very difficult task when the tumor is inside the brain of a human patient or model animal. Our innovation gives us unprecedented access with no time limits to 3D tumors mimicking better the clinical scenario, enabling optimal investigation. The research has been published in Science Advances. An article reprinted from the Tribune News Service in the e-edition of the newsandobserver.com by Greg Ellman, E-L-L-M-A-N. Gadgets. Nuple app is a tremendous hearing enhancement iPhone accessory. While doing some advanced reading about the Nuple, a hearing enhancement accessory for iPhone, I thought about finding a friend with hearing loss to put this through a proper test. I have good hearing, but after using the Nuple, I realized I didn't need a hearing test to see or hear what I've been missing. The goal of the Nuple is for you to never miss a conversation and provide clarity in noisy environments, such as crowded restaurants, airports, malls, stores, or even your own home. It uses AI-based noise reduction technologies to improve the audio in your current noisy environment. Nuple's creators came up with the concept after they had challenges hearing each other in a noisy restaurant. It's built with an iPhone Lightning port, attaches in a second, and is Apple certified. It measures about 2 by 1.2 by 0.27 inches and stores included a carrying case. The iPhone requirements are an iPhone 7 or newer with iOS 14. The setup isn't difficult, and the instructions and website video are very helpful to have it working properly in a short time. This gets you set up to create a two-way communication link to AirPods Pro and other compatible headphones, including PowerBeats Pro and other made-for-iPhone, MFI, hearing devices. The setup emphasizes starting with the AirPods Pro in the case, not in your ears. After downloading the Nuple Listen app, there are a few short audio clips to show how well the Nuple works in manual or automatic mode. With automatic and the AirPods Pro, it tracks your head's movement. With manual and other headphones, you choose which direction that audio needs to be captured. The uses are never-ending. The Nuple app gives examples in crowded restaurants and airports, which both displayed the advantages well. But taking it out for a day brought me grocery shopping, a veterinarian, a post office, and a few other stops, which were busy with lots of background noise. The way it works to amplify the sound described by the Nuple is three microphones together that create a steerable beamformer that improves the signal-to-noise ratio, SNR, in acoustically challenging environments. Combined with the app, which has controls for the area you want to concentrate on for listening, in just seconds, the audio is transmitted. With the AirPods Pro and the Nuple, the website states they allow dynamic head tracking to automatically provide precise steering of the directional beam based on where you are looking. After just a few hours using the pocket-sized Nuple, it's easy to see the tremendous results. The app's dashboard is well-designed, creating a user-friendly experience to control the audio beam's direction and volume. An Android version is in the works for early 2022. https://nuple.com, $199. The new Mophie Power Station Go, rugged with air compressor portable battery, does it all. Oh, that's a different device. Excuse me. And when I say all, the functionality of this battery has portable power for charging cell phones, jump-starting a car, boat, or truck. It even has an air compressor for filling tires, which makes this one of the most versatile portable power devices available. I won't read the rest of that. It's irrelevant. From CoolBlindTech.com, new prototype wristband offers people greater independence, posted August 16th. New prototype wristband offers people greater independence. Nearly 1 billion people worldwide have some degree of visual impairment. Assistive devices like the TOF Wristband V2 and others like it offer people the potential for greater independence and an improved standard of living. Madeon, M-A-D-A-E-O-N, has been hard at work going one step further in prototyping an open-source assistive wearable that could help in situations where a cane is not practical or useful. What is included with the TOF Wristband V2? The prototype consists of just four components plus a 3D-printed case and bracelet, which inevitably keeps down costs and complexity. How does the wristband work? The TOF Wristband V2 alerts its wearer to nearby obstacles through vibrations and is able to detect objects up to 4 meters away. As the wearer veers closer and closer to an obstacle, the vibration increases in frequency. A time-of-flight distance sensor is controlled by a feather, and the whole system is powered by a small lithium polymer battery. What does the future hold for the TOF wristband? Version 2 of this project picks up where version 1 left off. In that project, Madeyan mentioned the possibility of squeezing this project down to the size of a ring. Perhaps with better battery technology, a ring-size sensor might just be possible one day. This isn't the first wearable that has set out to assist the visually impaired. Back in 2019, we covered a laser-augmented glove that attempts something very similar. Also posted August 16th, Nest Hub will warn users about nearby pollution and smoke. Google is adding air quality data to its Nest Hub smart displays. While the new feature is still only available in select U.S. markets, it'll give some users an idea of how much risk they might face from smoke and pollution in the area. Google says it will roll out the new feature over the coming weeks. An air quality index badge will show up on the clock and weather widget on the Nest Hub's ambient screen. Anyone who doesn't want to see the badge will be able to opt out. The data comes from the Environmental Protection Agency, which rates air quality on a scale from 0 to 500, with 0 being the best air quality. It also color codes its ratings in categories ranging from good to hazardous air quality. The EPA calculates risk by assessing 5 major pollutants: carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, smog, and particle pollution, which includes soot and smoke. Smoke from raging wildfires in the western U.S. has spread across the country over the past month. New York State issued a health advisory in July when smoke arrived from the Bootleg Fire in Oregon, thousands of miles away. In places where Google's new air quality feature is available, Nest Hubs will issue an alert when pollution reaches an unhealthy level, or a level that's unhealthy for sensitive groups. The Nest Hub will also respond to the voice command, "What's the air quality near me?" The EPA's air quality data is easy to access even if you don't have a Nest Hub or if its new features aren't available in your area. The EPA's AirNow website lets users plug in their location to get an air quality rating for that area. There's also the EPA's fire and smoke map, which has pretty wild visualizations of how far wildfire smoke reaches. It doesn't always pick up everything. While the EPA has a network of thousands of air quality sensors across the nation, it doesn't always pick up everything. The sensors are expensive to deploy, and it can be spread far apart from each other, so they can miss higher concentrations of pollution in some areas. Its monitors have also missed major toxic releases in the past, when equipment failed or was out of operation, a Reuters investigation found. Lori Motis has a personal anecdote in the current issue of the August Blind Post. "I'm working on a good way to format the website with past issues from the last 11 years. I will begin with this year's and then each year prior. September is the Blind Post's 11-year anniversary. Please send in your submissions and even some stories, poems, or funnies pertaining to the blind and low vision community for this special issue. There is never a cost for your stories, adventures, poems, or funnies. If they are too long, I might have to split over 2 months. Also, folks would like some new writers, but love the current ones. Anyone wanting to submit bi-monthly or just a guest article on subjects pertaining to the blind and low vision community, contact me. I know many use various phones and computers with screen readers and various technologies. Even something you learned about the Echo or other similar devices is always fun. Even some fun stories, like some of the ones we have had about animals and various other subjects. I will always let you know if it is suitable for the news or not. Now for my true story. Since the pandemic, I have not really ventured out on long walks. I found that every time I went for a walk, there were others out there walking too, and no one seemed to be wearing masks. Well, why would you when you're outside breathing fresh air? I then began walking earlier or walking a shorter route. Then over the winter, I was not feeling that good, mostly due to being glum about the virus situation and eating comfort foods that I should not have indulged in. The holidays were strange, and shopping and other outings were just not the same, if at all. This past spring came, and folks were getting their vaccines, and masks were no longer required, and we could go out and shop again and take buses again and celebrate holidays again with our families. Feeling happier and better physically, on Saturday, June 5th, it was a beautiful and sunny morning, and I decided I would take my long 45-minute walk I used to take last year, the last time being early December 2020. I always wear a hat with a brim because there are always leafy branches that grow in the spring and are not always trimmed right away. Stan, my guide dog, is an excellent guide and knows to slow at certain bumps in the sidewalk and takes me around all kinds of obstacles like cars parked across the sidewalk and trash cans or even construction. The only thing that guide dogs cannot always do is see over their heads for overhead obstacles. They can learn if you train them for certain situations, but those that appear out of the norm, not so much. Even when I used to travel with a white cane, I could not easily notice an overhead obstacle. Well, I was really enjoying stepping out and walking at a good fast pace, which I love. Stan was happy getting out for the long walk, too. He likes it better than the same old short, boring walk. We were over halfway home. I walk in a big loop in a residential neighborhood. We have walked the route quite a lot for the past 4 or more years, with never any problems or obstacles. I tend to do a lot of thinking while I'm walking because I know I do not have to really worry, because it's not really a challenge for my dog or me. Suddenly, my face hit something very hard and solid right on the bridge of my nose. My hat flew off behind me. I was stunned and seeing stars, at least my brain was. I do not see anything with my eyes, since they're both prosthetic. I reached up with my right hand and felt this exceptionally large, hard, solid branch that had grown out across the sidewalk right at my face level. I am 5'7" tall. I said out loud, "Where did this come from?" And I just could not believe it. I found my hat and got myself together and walked home. I passed my sister's house, but I thought I'd better get home while I can. I did not want to faint or anything. When I got home, I texted my sister and told her what happened, and told her where the branch was. She went out and walked my route backwards from her house and saw the branch I had run into. She took several pictures. We went to the urgent care, and x-rays were taken, and the nose was too swollen to see if I'd broken anything. I seemed to have a sort of neck whiplash feeling along with my low back, I guess from stopping so suddenly. I was supposed to follow up with my doctor in a couple of weeks. Well, to make a long story short, I had to go back to urgent care due to still having lots of pain, and I could not get in to my primary doctor. I was referred to an ear, nose, and throat doc and then had a CT scan, and due to the fracture that I did sustain, it did not heal correctly. And I'm having nose surgery on August 10th to have the nose rebroken. Ouch, but I will be under anesthesia. Anyway, my month off was spent in pain, but I did have a wonderful surprise on my birthday weekend in July. My youngest sister, Kelly, came to visit, surprising me for my birthday. Kelly and my sister, Christina, that lives here, went with me on that same walk. They walked behind me and my dog, carrying clippers and trimming anything that was sticking out in the way. They also pointed out various possible stumbling spots and possible tree issues. When we got to the tree branch I had met with my nose, I was elated to find out that it was no longer there. I have walked that way again by myself, and it was interesting to see that Stan, my guide dog, stopped at all the places that my sisters had pointed out to me. I'm somewhat fearful of venturing out of my neighborhood like I used to many years ago. A hat is not a great help when it comes to large, solid branches at your head level. I would like to find a way with maybe an app or a device that might warn me of any kind of obstacle at my head level. The high temperatures here and the smoky, unhealthy air from the fires have not allowed me to get out much lately. I hope to get out and move again in confidence after I heal up from my surgery. I know when I did horseback riding in Nevada, I wore a helmet, and also when riding a tandem bike. Gosh, I hope I don't have to wear one when taking a walk. Thanks for reading my story. Please feel free to share any of your interesting obstacle adventures. I could post them in future issues, only if you want. God bless you all. Lori, L-O-R-I, a.k.a. Food Lady. Well, I ran out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.